Yes.
Hey.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm going to keep muttering.
Cool.
Nice.
Good.
Unicorn.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Giant Robot Smashing Into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is August 17th, 2012. I am Ben Orenstein, and I am here with Gabe Burke-Williams. How's it going, Gabe?
It's going well.
Awesome. So, Gabe, you wanted to come here and talk about Apprentice.io. Is that
yes.
true? Excellent. Can you give us sort of a quick overview of what that program is?
It's our apprentice program, unsurprisingly. People apply. If they're accepted, we take them on for 3 months. We train them in Rails and Ruby and whatever else we think that they should learn during their
Kung Fu.
Sure.
Yep.
That's actually the first month.
Okay.
It's a lot of wax on, wax off. During the third month, we try to find them a job. They still learn, but there's more of a focus on hiring because we want people to come out of here with a job, and they definitely have hireable skills.
Yeah. So it's very real-world focused then, right? It's not sort of theoretical knowledge?
Yes. It's very, very much real-world. All of the apprentices work on client projects. They also have breakable toys, which is a concept from Apprenticeship Patterns, the book. The idea is that they have something that doesn't really matter to the clients, but matters very much to themselves that they can fiddle around with and break. Breakable toy. But it's mostly client projects.
Interesting. So this is such an interesting change because, like, when I wanted to learn programming, I went and did, like, computer science education and learned very little real-world programming at all, and then had to basically be trained on the job. So this is kind of, like, directly into that instead.
Yes. We're not just nerding out about red black trees.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever used a red black tree, kids.
Mm-hmm. right.
But yes, it's there's a ton of real world knowledge. A lot of people actually come with computer science degrees, unsurprisingly.
Huh, yeah. And they want that last step of like, okay, now I have the theory, so maybe teach me something that actually shows up day to day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, and this is not the only program like this in the country, right? I'm seeing these like all over the place. There's like Hungry Academy and a number of notable others. And so it feels to me almost like a backlash or maybe a response to sort of the market conditions. Like we sort of started this program because we were having such a hard time finding awesome developers that were already awesome.
Yes. I actually came in through the apprentice program before it was called Apprentice.io last year.
Uh-huh. And you're full-time now?
And I'm full-time now, yes.
Cool.
I'm not a year-long apprentice.
That explains why I see you so often.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a key.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a sort of a lack of very well-trained Ruby developers. There's always a ton of demand for it.
Right.
I think Dan Croak, our chief marketing officer, wrote a post on bostino.com about how there are so few Ruby developers, so much demand, and like 10 of these sort of apprentice programs that just kind of sprang up over like months. There was so many posts about like, there's a new one. There's Hungry Academy, Code Academy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And us.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was talking to our CTO, Joe, the other day about sort of what we look for when we're hiring somebody. And a couple of years ago, it was like someone that is already extremely proficient with Rails and is able to hit the ground running immediately. And now we're looking at people who are maybe like 6 months or a year away from being that guy. Because once they are that guy, you can't hire them anymore. Like demand is just so insane, like they'll be gone. They won't even be like applying for jobs anymore.
Yes, I hadn't actually thought of that, but we're very sneakily getting in on the ground floor and producing great developers.
Yeah,
that we maybe couldn't hire after they had that sort of experience.
Right. How have the results been so far from the program, would you say?
In what sense?
Is it a success? Are we failing? Is it going okay?
I would not say that we're failing. I think that apprentices have all come out of it with a lot of real-world skills. Certainly, I think of the curve of their learning as exponential because a lot of apprentices come in with a lot of potential, but maybe not as much knowledge, which is why they're coming in.
Sure.
And then they learn an incredible amount while here. I remember when I was an apprentice, I just learned some like 10 new Vim concepts a day. And that was just Vim. The Ruby and Rails knowledge was just, it just shot up. And maybe I'm at linear gains now, but it's just kind of a fire hose.
Yeah.
And apprentices can learn as much as they want.
Sure. And in terms of like concrete results, we've ended up hiring a number of apprentices internally, like you, for example, and a couple others. And other ones have gone on to do startups or get hired at other companies.
Yes. I don't have exact stats on it, but I feel like a lot, I almost want to say 90% of maybe 100% have like found a job, started their own company, or been hired by Thoughtbot after going through the program.
Awesome. That's great. So has anything about the program surprised you?
Not specifically that I can recall. It's hard to be a good mentor.
Why is that?
That wasn't really surprising, but it's hard to find an approach that kind of works for all mentors. I've been a mentor ever since we started Apprentice.io. So I've had, I think, 5 apprentices. And it's been different for all of them. I think I'm getting better as a mentor just from kind of finding commonalities.
Surely.
But everyone has different gaps in their knowledge. And it's difficult to find those gaps.
Can you take me through like what are some of your techniques? How do you be a mentor? What is the day to day?
The very first day, I sit down with the apprentice and I ask them, what do they want to learn? What do they think that like they're good at? What kind of experience do they have in Ruby and Rails? Because we've had people who were learning the Pickaxe book, the basic Ruby book.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people who did like sysadmin at like universities for 3 years. So like huge range of experiences. So I asked, you know, what do you want to get better at? And a lot of times, and this is what makes it really tricky, apprentices don't know what they don't know.
Sure. Yep.
So like, I'll say like, do you know what like design patterns are? And they'll be like, no. So I'm like, okay, well, let's try to get some design patterns in there, some good object oriented skills. So that's the very first day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to tailor, and then I nailed down very specific goals. So if they want to learn, get better at OO, I say, okay, let's do Gang of Four. Let's come up with 3 patterns, try to use them in your code. So there's it's not like, I want to be better at OO. It's a very vague goal, you know,
totally.
Like I have, you know, more experience than they do. So I say like, okay, here's the checklist.
Right.
We're going to do very specific things.
Something you can actually put on a list and then be like, yes, you did
right.
that thing.
So like getting better at open source is
right. Completely nebulous.
Exactly. Yeah. So I say, well, how about you submit a pull request or take a pull request on a project that I manage, which is hard.
Yeah.
That's if you don't have any experience with open source, that's a month. So that's kind of the beginning. We keep track of weekly goals. We use Backpack, and each apprentice uses their homepage to say like, this week I learned this, next week I want to learn this, this is how it went. And we share that page with the whole company to kind of make publicly accountable, sort of. I don't know if anyone really looks at them, but it definitely kind of changes the apprentice's mindset.
Right.
Because they think people are looking at them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
let's hope the apprentices don't listen to this.
Yeah.
The secret's out now.
Yeah. Go back to work, apprentices. So that's kind of my general flow.
Mm-hmm. How about, do you pair with your apprentice during the day?
Yes. You kind of have to manage pairing. Sometimes it slows you down and you like need to push something out. I try to not be like that. I think that it's very easy to kind of be like, that'll slow me down too much. I don't want to pair with you. Which is kind of a downer for the apprentice.
Totally. Yeah.
And also pairing is an insanely good way to get better.
Absolutely.
I like just random things that you notice someone doing that you didn't know were possible.
Absolutely.
Mostly Vim. Yeah. Like Vim is it, but maybe they don't know how to write an RSpec test from scratch, like given a blank file.
Right.
And it's hard to discover that. Like without pairing with them. So if you do like, okay, like let's write a test for that. And then they're like, then, you know, you've discovered like a weakness and it's easy to fix because you're pairing with them.
Totally. And you're bumping into like by definition, real world things because exactly. You're actually working on a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my personal process in terms of like the general ThoughtBot process that everyone goes through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 3-month apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
We try to have 3 mentors, 1 per month.
So you rotate mentors.
Yes, we rotate mentors. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We do a mentor handoff. We sometimes pick up the
apprentice and yeah. hand it to the next person.
Yeah. Everyone here has great squat form.
Sure.
We hire light apprentices. We do a mentor handoff with the apprentice, with both mentors in the room and then the apprentice, and to say like, okay, what are the weaknesses? What did you work on? Where do you think the apprentice should go next?
Mm-hmm.
As well as like apprentice self-assessments. And you can kind of like see where the mentor thinks they should go and the apprentice thinks they should go. Which is like good because then you don't lose like a month and have to kind of start over.
Sure. There's some continuity. Mentor.
Exactly. That's really the only thing that's like common to all of the apprentices.
Got it. How would you describe an ideal candidate?
I would say eagerness to learn is the cliched way to put it,
mm-hmm.
but is also true.
Mm.
I was like apprentices who really love to like read. So if you give them like a chapter and then they're like, I read 6 chapters over the weekend. You're like, well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Or they do lots of self study. That boosts things a lot.
Mm. So it's a little bit hard to look for those things in like a candidate though, right? Like when someone
yes.
applies.
Enthusiasm, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Some people are definitely like more enthusiastic about doing it. It's hard to say what an ideal candidate is,
mm-hmm.
just because the only thing I can think of is like that they've all of the like apprentices have really had in common is just like they go out there and they like go for it mm-hmm. and they like I think working at ThoughtBot is kind of like a fire hose, even for me.
Yeah.
And so if they can soak up as much of it as they can by like reading books or like pairing.
So someone that's good at teaching themselves is a good candidate. Someone that's able to sort of process a bunch of information flowing in. How about like if I was considering applying for the program, do I need to have programmed in the past?
I would say it definitely helps. I think we have had people who had 0 programming experience, and at this point we have so many candidates that we do give some preference to like people who have programmed, especially in Ruby or Rails. Like mm-hmm. if you have a GitHub, for example, mm-hmm. some public or Bitbucket, we don't care. some public demonstration that you know how to code, especially that you know how to code Rails.
Yeah.
An indication that like you like coding. A GitHub account is a good way of showing that off.
Sure.
You get a lot more out of the program if you start there and we don't have to kind of bootstrap you up.
Right.
That said, like the person I mentioned before who like was learning the pickaxe book as we kind of came in has been probably one of the best apprentices we ever had. We actually hired him.
Huh.
So
it wasn't you, was it?
It wasn't me. Okay. No. So sort of a case-by-case basis, but that's definitely a strong signal in your favor.
So it's possible for employers to actually sign up for the program as well, right?
Yes. Employers sign up for free. The advantage of signing up is that they can see apprentices and their updates, which are like mini blog posts on Apprentice.io per apprentice that detail what they've been doing. The employers show up in the employer list, which apprentices can browse. Sometimes employers don't complete their profile. So complete your profile or else you won't show up in the list. Mm. So the advantage is they get access to the apprentices. They get contact info. And they can email or tweet at the apprentices and kind of talk to them.
Official permission to they go harass them for employment.
Yes. Cool. If the employer hires an apprentice, we take a fee that's 20% of their first year salary, which is the same as most recruitment agencies, except that we can offer a much higher quality.
Sure, absolutely.
Guarantee, basically, that than most recruiters can.
Right. I mean, a recruiter is just like, I found a person for you.
Right.
We're like, and we trained a person for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now I'd like to actually bring in a real-life apprentice, not a former apprentice, but a current apprentice, Edward Lovall. Hey. How you doing, Edward?
Pretty well. How are you?
Good. Edward has been huge. He's actually been helping us record and edit these podcasts, so you're familiar with his work already, at least on the audio side. But aside from the podcast, what have you been doing during your apprenticeship?
So I'm a design apprentice as opposed to a developer apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit different than some of the things Gabe's been talking about. For example, we don't pair as much.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, it's less, we're not learning so much how do you write CSS or something. It's more these design principles or, I mean, it could be even be CSS too if that's something you need help on. But a lot of it's design principles, laying out pages, colors, formatting, just thinking about design problems. So things like that. So I've been learning a lot of that. I never went to design school in the first place. So a lot of that has been my focus. I'm pretty good with like the HTML, CSS side of it, but the actual design principles has been a lot more where I've grown while I've been here.
Interesting, yeah. It seems like that would be tough to kind of cram into an apprenticeship. It's kind of like, by the way, develop good taste in the next few months. And I mean, there's more to it than that, right?
Just totally.
Like there are fundamental principles, just like with programming. But
right, like one of the first major things I learned was about grids and laying a site out on a grid as opposed to just sort of throwing elements where they feel like they should go in that one page, but trying to stick to actual a framework, if you will.
So has the program been good for you? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it's been incredible. Yeah. So actually today's my last day.
Yep.
So I can look back on the whole thing. It's been really awesome. I left my job to do it and I would do that in a second.
Oh, wow.
So if I had to go back, yeah, I would absolutely do that again.
Cool. Yeah. And the results from it? Are you going somewhere?
I am. So I actually I got a job at a place called Intrepid.
Awesome.
Intrepid Labs, I believe. And they're out in Cambridge, and it should be really fun. They do iOS dev, so I get to be one of the first designers there.
Fantastic.
So that should be really
Congratulations.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool. So a successful result?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So what has the hardest part been?
Probably just pushing through day after day a lot of it. I mean, I'm learning all these things that are so outside of the things I have ever learned before that it was hard to just keep going every single day and like, oh man, I feeling like I was totally failing at all these things because I don't know them, but it's just, no, you're learning and you'll get better and you just have to keep pushing at it. But the whole culture here is really encouraging of that and willing to, I could go up to any designer, not just my mentor at the time, and ask, hey, can you help me with this? Or can you recommend something for me to look at? Or something like that.
Yeah.
And they will. And they're very, very good about that.
That's good. It's good to know it. It's happened on both sides, that sort of knowledge sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I even feel, too, that the designers or developers here don't feel as if they can't learn. In fact, completely the opposite, where I, even as a apprentice who didn't do any of this stuff before, could offer things to them even and show them things that they had never seen before.
Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, Gabe, did you have any of that experience where like you feel like you learned something from your apprentices or in the process of teaching?
Yes.
Sorry. It's okay. You can say no.
I'm not sure I've learned as much about, like, developing or, like, about Ruby specifically, but definitely a lot about kind of ThoughtBot.
Hmm.
I guess it's more about how little we document things.
No, and that makes sense, actually. Like, so, like, the newest person to the project is always the guy that points out, like, how do you do this? Like, they're the best person to, like, identify deficiencies in documentation, right?
Yeah, I guess deficiencies in how we bring people on to ThoughtBot.
Mm.
We have an onboarding document now,
mm-hmm.
but it still, for example, doesn't tell you how to write a blog post on our blog. That's been confusing for everyone,
right?
Especially people who don't like know Tumblr, but even for people who do.
Yeah.
So
one of the things I've noticed when I do teach people things is, like, it tends to crystallize my understanding of something. It's like I kind of have this sort of not fully formed understanding of a concept, and then I'm trying to teach it to someone, and they ask me, like, a very basic question, and I'm like, wow, good question. And I find that I end up with a better understanding afterwards once I teach a thing and have to really go figure out the real details of it. So I imagine you're getting that as a mentor.
That has definitely happened.
Cool. So, Edward, could you describe a sort of normal day for you?
Yeah. So I'll come in and we're working on a client project and I'll be helping my mentor with something. So maybe he's designed something and I'll be implementing it in the browser or he'll have something sort of half designed or half thought out and I will complete that.
You were doing client work?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty much every day. I also worked with another developer apprentice on a breakable and his breakable toy and designing his breakable toy.
Oh, great.
And that was a lot of, that was really, really good for me, I think. Hmm. So it's pretty much every day working in a text editor, writing HTML and CSS and sometimes sketching, sometimes mocking up things.
Did we get you on Vim during your apprenticeship?
A little bit. Yeah. I started learning it actually as soon as TextMate went open source. I'm still definitely in the process of learning it, but it's getting a lot better day by day. So
it's hard to pass through several months of ThoughtBot without getting the Vim infection.
It is.
Unless you're Matt Jankowski.
Yes, he's resisted. He has an immunity.
I resisted for a while, and I still understand. Like, I feel more comfortable in TextMate than I do in Vim, but there's reason to switch. And again, like, that's, people are very open, people are very persuasive, and people think about things very pragmatically and will point you, say, look, this is better, this is why. Mm-hmm. Not, I don't care personally, but you should look at this. And I learned a lot.
Sure.
Way, so.
Yeah. So it's your last day.
Yes.
So you can safely tell us how you think the program could be improved, right?
Yeah. One of the other designers here and I were talking about this on a drive up to a little meetup and just sort of thinking about, like, what are the best ways to get people? And design is sort of trickier, I think, in some ways, at least we haven't nailed it yet, because it's much more tricky. Like, as you said, design problems are sort of fuzzier and not as, well, programmatic. Mm-hmm. And so that's a tricky thing. So we were talking about how we can improve this. And I think the best thing I did was working on that breakable toy with the developer apprentice, because that sort of gave me, like, I was the lead designer on that. I was the only designer on
that. Right.
So it helped me grow a lot. It was tricky coming in. My first day, I ended up going out of the office to another client, and that was really hard. Just, like, I'm trying to get my bearings and I'm with somebody who also doesn't have their bearings because they're starting on this project that day. And that was really difficult.
Cool.
So things like that. But I mean, it's also very hard because it's specific to every person. Like, my level of experience and my level of help needed is going to be totally different than Gabe or coming in or something, you know, anybody else.
Yeah.
I would need much more help with design.
Yes.
Naturally.
Also true.
Yeah. We can swap some Vim skills for some design skills. Trade share.
Yeah.
I think that's actually, that sounds like a great pattern probably to reuse of having the design apprentices working with the development apprentices on breakable toys.
Yes. I am actually the product manager for Apprentice.io.
Yep.
So I try to intercept apprentices on their first day or sometime in their first week and basically tell them if they have anything that they think could be improved in any way to just tell me and I can do something to make that happen. Because I think that we can always improve Apprentice.io. I think that it's pretty good, but there are still things that could make it, you know, perfect-ish. And I'm always trying to, like, find out ways in which we're weak or ways in which maybe we were, we didn't live up to expectations in, like, whatever area. It could be really small, but I want to fix it.
Yeah, totally. Edward, do you have any advice for incoming apprentice for success in the program?
Talk with your mentor as soon as you can to try to figure out what you don't know. Because I came in knowing that I didn't know some things, but I learned a lot of, you know, I'm in my third month and I'm learning this concept and it's like, wow, if I had started on this month one, I really could have nailed this. But as it is, like, I'm going to get a decent pass at it and then continue to learn on my own. But that's probably the biggest thing. Try to figure out exactly what you don't know. Like, force your mentor to take a look at your portfolio, take a look at your skills, and be harsh with you and say, no, you don't know this. You need to learn this.
Right.
And then try to figure out how to do that, because that's how you grow the best.
Totally.
I think that's also true for mentors. At the end of each week, we review. I review with my apprentice the weekly goals and whether they were accomplished, why they weren't accomplished, and then set the goals for next week. And after that, I ask for an honest assessment of how the week went and what I could have improved. And I go for I ask for very brutal honesty.
Which is hard.
It is hard.
It's hard to give.
Which is why I'm very emphatic that I won't take it personally, that it's not about me. It's about me as a mentor and how I can help them better, because it's for them, you know. It's not going to help me if I'm a better mentor. It's going to help them. And that's been pretty helpful in discovering ways that I can help that specific apprentice.
Yep. Have they been pretty willing to offer that sort of brutal feedback?
It varies.
Yeah.
It varies depending on the person. Sometimes you have to kind of ask again and again and just be like, I know something went wrong. Something wasn't perfect. What was it?
Sure.
Sometimes I'll say I don't know if this went well. How do you think this went? I was trying that out this week. And I'll just do little experiments.
So if someone wanted to apply to the program, what would they do?
The process is they go to Apprentice.io.
Apprentice.io?
Apprentice.io.
Yep.
Yes. .IndianOcean.
There it is.
And they click the sign up as an apprentice button. They fill out the form. I would encourage them to be descriptive in their why they want to apply. Telling a story is always nice. And then that goes to me and I review that. If I think that went well, I send them a link to take the interview, which is a video interview thing that you get questions and then you answer them on video. Then the video is submitted. The next step after that is code review. So they send over some code and we review it. And then after that, if it's still going well, we take them on as an apprentice.
Great. And we have a bit of a backlog at the moment, right?
Yes, we do have a bit of a backlog at the moment, both in reviewing apprentices and also in that we don't have room for new apprentices until January of next year.
January of next year.
Which is prominently displayed on the apprentice sign-up form.
Okay, good. So apply early and be patient.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, Gabe and Edward, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having
it's
me.
It's been a pleasure. I think that just about wraps things up. Now, often on the podcast, we'll take some time to answer your questions. So if you have something that you'd like us to tackle on the air, you can email your question to info@thoughtbot.com or tweet to us @thoughtbot. Today's podcast was recorded by Edward Lovell. Again, thank you, Edward, for all your work.
You're welcome.
We're going to miss you. And it's produced by Chad Vitale. Thanks for listening.